Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by a panel of expert guests as we look ahead to the Genesis Scottish Open and the Barbasol Championship. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. This week, I'm pleased to be joined by Ben Coley from Sporting Life, Tom Jacobs, golf writer and podcaster, and Sky Sports broadcaster Kit Alexander. Welcome, gents. And before we get into this week, a quick look back at last. And we came close. A few very close shouts, but no cigar. Adam Schenk and Cam Young, both looking very good in the John Deere. But, well, they sort of fell away, but were blown away, which we will get onto there. And we did have some returns on. I mean, the most predictable bet and returns of all time, Alex Bjork, top 20 in Denmark. So, Ben, let's start with you. It was a great tournament yet again, the Maiden Himmerland. Lots of excitement. How did you go throughout the week?
My players were so bad that I can't even remember who they were. Julien Guerrier was about best. I took a fair few big chances. I put Apollosen as well, and he was disappointing. Adrian Ategi, who I'd keep an eye on him because he's missing a lot of very short putts lately, and I kind of thought it was temporary, and we'll see if it is. Obviously, we'll come on to the Ryder Cup, but if he's to sort of revitalise his small chance of making that side, he's going to need to make those short putts again. But I tipped Rasmus in Germany. He withdrew, and then he won next time in Denmark. And I guess that sums up how things have gone since Greer won in Texas. But, you know, I don't feel like I'm far away. I've put up a lot of selections who've played well the last 3 weeks and not just quite well enough. And that's the game, isn't it? So no finer time than the present to find someone who gets over the line.
Exactly right. Some big events to do it in coming up. More eyeballs and ears listening to those previews. What about yourself, Tom? Any success in right-hand back in Denmark or over the Atlantic?
Success would be kind. So Matthew Pavon sort of came close in Himmerland. He was up there and I was really impressed with his play for the most part, and definitely someone I would keep an eye on for the next few weeks. But it was at the John Deere Classic where came the closest. So Smalley and Schenk were both there. And Lucas Glover is also in the top six going into the final round. So I had three players within three shots. And actually, I think Alex Smalley, I mean, Schenk did let himself a little bit down. But Smalley played really well, sorry. And normally what he did in the final round would probably be good enough. But Sepp Straka, you know, came to the fore and should have been 11 under, was 9 under on the final day. And that wins your golf tournament, right? So a little bit disheartened that it didn't come off. But by the same token, you can't really account for these sort of things. So great news potentially for the Ryder Cup team for Straka, and you know, just good to see someone come out and win on a Sunday.
Oh, Tom, I'm loving it. Like, you're reading my rundown, because that's what I'm about to talk through next with Kit Alexander, who's joining us. And some great storylines there. A home win for Rasmus, who's finding some form again after he sort of started very well, then Nikolai took over, then him. It's sort of the yo-yo effect of who's playing best. And Sepp Straka, who's very much entered the conversation for Ryder Cup, the big hitting Austrian, who when he holds putts, going to go incredibly low. And we spoke last week about Ludvig Ahlberg as well, who again had another top 10 finish, I think it was there, very high finish. So are these three names who are really entering the conversation, do you think, Kit?
100% when it comes to the Ryder Cup. Timely wins, because I think for Rasmus Højgaard and for Sepp Straka, start of this year, they were very much in the Ryder Cup conversation, and they're not really poor, but in different form, shall we say, through the year so far. They'd kind of slipped down the pecking order a little bit and literally down the qualification list, whereas Straka with that win now up to 7 in the world points list. Højgaard's taken a big jump on both lists. And they're now firmly back in the conversation. When we're looking at how the team is shaping up, and we're, 6 weeks away, I think, from them being finalised, and a couple of huge events. We've got the Rolex Series Genesis Scottish Open this week, the Open Championship, the final next week. This next fortnight is going to go a long way to cementing the teams really on both sides of the Atlantic. And Europe right now, I think the situation we're in, we've got 8 guys who I think you can be pretty certain are there. Rahm, Hovland, McIlroy, Hatton, Fleetwood. Who am I forgetting? Lowry.
Fitzpatrick.
There we go. And then Justin Rose, who I think has done enough. They're your 8 that are in. Interestingly, all with previous Ryder Cup experience, 5 of them major winners. And then we've got that battle really for those final 4 spots. It's 6 automatic selections, three from the Europe list, three from the world list. So even two of those guys that we've just mentioned there in that what you would think will be the core eight are going to need a captain's pick, but they're going to get them from Luke Donald, I think is the accepted wisdom right now, and I would go along with that. So it's who's going to get themselves into those four extra spots. And you've got Yannick Paul currently occupying the third qualifying spot on the European points list. And then you just look at some of the other guys who we're talking about and guys who sometimes we actually aren't talking about as well, because the next guys outside of the automatic qualification on the European list are Adrian Maronk, now Rasmus Højgaard, Victor Perez, and Adrian Ategi, who we've mentioned with the short putting. And on the world list, the next guys not in, Seamus Power at 11, a winner in the Barbasol previously, which really ignited his career. And Alex Noren, interestingly, who is under the radar in some reasonable form, is a good links player as well. So a good couple of weeks here could really push him into the conversation. And of course, he played in France, in Paris. There's a lot to be decided. And also Ludvig Åberg, who a lot of people think, if he just shows the form now that he's come onto the PGA Tour with, that will be enough to get him a pick. And I wouldn't disagree with that, given the standard he got to in college and what he's doing now having turned pro. So that's kind of a snapshot of where we are with Europe going into a really big 2 weeks. And I actually personally, I've been saying for quite a long time, I quite fancy this European team. And I think we'll actually have a much stronger team than most people think. And this will be a real battle, especially being at home.
Love it. And yeah, it is very exciting and some very likely some pretty new faces, which is great, and see how they go on the big stage. But we will do a Ryder Cup preview at some point. That was a good start. But let's get into this week, and really looking forward to watching some Lynx golf over the next few weeks in particular. And the warm weather firming up those fairways to make it a real challenge with the Open Championship at Hoylake looming large. But first, let's get stuck into the Genesis Scottish Open from the Renaissance Club. The Genesis Scottish Open returns to the Renaissance Club just outside Edinburgh this week, where Xander Schauffele defends his title. This will be the fifth staging of the Genesis Scottish Open at this golf course, and the second time the event will be co-sanctioned with the PGA Tour. It is a stellar field once again, with eight of the top 10 players in the world there, including world number one Scottie Scheffler and the likes of Rory McIlroy, Patrick Cantlay and Jordan Spieth. Tom, I'm going to come to you first. The Renaissance Club, we're starting to get to know very well, actually. It's one of those modern links courses. It's sort of a similar mold to your Castle Stewart's and King's Barnes, but perhaps not as generous off the tee. What do you make of this course? Because lots of players have spoken at length at different times about it. And what stood out for you at the previous stagings? Because the winning scores have seriously varied and the weather seems to play a bit of a part with that.
Yeah, so I think the key point is it's a modern links. I think that's the main part. Like, it's not one that's just, you know, always by the coast, or, you know, really that the weather affects all the way around. But there is meant to be weather here on Sunday, and that should really affect the winning score. We saw it last year. And I think it's one of those ones where we've seen that people can come off the pace. Like, I think the last or the four winners at this golf course so far have all been 27th or worse after round one. And Xander Schauffele, I think, was 69th. Going into the second round, he actually got into fourth at the halfway point. So you do have to react pretty quickly. You can't have two bad rounds and then be chasing. But I think it's a course that rewards really good play. We've seen people come straight over, whether it be from Ireland or from the Travellers or the John Deere, that you can just play really well, regardless of, you know, what type of player you are and what you're doing, which is, I think, leaning into the modern links thing. There's a little bit of discrepancy of whether distance matters or not. I think it's only advantageous, like it is anywhere else in the world. But I typically just focus on people just making sure they're hitting plenty of greens. If they can do it from the rough, that's absolutely fine. Then ultimately it'll come down to who makes those putts, and whether that's windy on Sunday and really, you know, causes an issue, we'll find out. But ultimately, I think looking at players that have played well in Scotland, have played well in you know, Open Championships, obviously, in the past, is really important. The one thing I did consider is whether not playing the Irish Open the week before for the first time since we've come to the Renaissance Club would be a factor for some of the DP World Tour players. Obviously, it's not going to affect the PGA Tour players that are coming over from America anyway, but that was one thing that was in my mind as to whether that would be a negative impact, but we'll soon see, I think.
Yeah, absolutely right. And Ben has said it's very interesting that the schedule's swapped a bit. And a lot of these people are probably now using this, you know, as a real trial run for the Open in particular. That hasn't really come to fruition much, apart from Phil Mickelson in 2013, who went on the following week. How much do you think playing this week will help the guys when approaching Royal Liverpool? And how much would that be in their mind? Because sometimes you hear, you know, they're just trying out things and they don't care too much about the result this week, but going forwards, they will be.
I think, to be honest with you, the thing that matters is that the player feels prepared, and that can be in any form you like. So back in the day, Padraig Harrington would go over to play in the Irish PGA Championship, for instance. And we know that last year, Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth were out over in Ireland having a 7:30 in the morning Guinness and warming up there before they came over to Scotland. Rory McIlroy's back this year. Now, he has tended not to play the Scottish Open. Obviously, he did play it before he won at Hoylake. He shot 64 at Royal Aberdeen, had an awful Friday at a time when he was struggling to put four rounds together. And it served as a really good sort of primer for Hoylake, but it's different things to different people. I mean, Colin Morikawa was a good example. He played terribly in Scotland, but he learned something. He learned about, I think, the lie angle of his, I don't know, I'm talking gibberish here, I don't understand golf clubs, but, you know, he changed his setup.
The putter for Morikawa as well, I followed him a lot on feature groups that week at Renaissance, and he could not hole a bean. Warren Humphreys and I were commentating, we had not seen a worst putting performance from an elite player that we could remember. And then he goes and wins the next week. Without getting used to those slower, link slopey greens at Renaissance that week, he does not win the Open the next week.
And it's one of the incredible things about Morikawa, isn't it? For all his brilliance, he's won two majors, and both times he was the best putter in the field. So he's had these two remarkable spike putting weeks, and he's won two majors. And whether that happens again remains to be seen. But yeah, like I said, Cam Smith last year, 10th in the Scottish Open, a lovely primer. But then we've had Francesco Molinari warm up in the John Deere Classic. So as I said, the important thing is that the player feels like they've made the right decision, got some good work done. And whether they win or not, I mean, we can get hung up on that. I don't think it hurts to win this tournament. Phil Mickelson won them back to back. I don't think Xander Schauffele didn't win the Open because he won the Scottish Open. But like I said, if your player finishes 40th this week, your player for the Open, that is, I wouldn't let it put you off, because as long as they've got the work done that they wanted to, the bigger picture for most elite players, and there are a couple of exceptions like Justin Thomas, who can't afford to miss a chance to earn some FedEx Cup and Ryder Cup points. But for most elite players, the bigger picture is whatever happens this week, let's be ready for next Thursday.
Yeah, that's right. And the exciting thing with those players are faces that we don't always see. And I think the Americans love to come over and play them. I saw Max Homer last year leaving on the Friday and just playing North Berwick just for a laugh and filming it. So, you know, getting an extra practice. And it is such a great field, possibly the strongest ever assembled for the Genesis Scottish Open, with 8 of the top 10 in the world there. Schauffele obviously got it won last year with Cantlake attending. But there have been some quite interesting odds-wise and bigger prices with your Minwoo Lees, Bernd Wiesbergs. Around the 40-1 mark is the average price for the winner so far. So I know you won't give us a tip, Kit, and that's absolutely fine. But do you expect the big names to dominate this event, or are you expecting, you know, some other sort of roughies coming up through the field?
I think, not to sit on the fence, I think it's a combination of two. And for a lot of the reasons that have just been discussed in terms of it being somewhat of a primer week for next week. Now, there are a lot of very good players, world-class players in this field. So one or two of them, I think, will contend. I don't think as many will contend as if this was the major that they were looking for. If you get my drift, they're going to be far more focused on next week. So inevitably, with that much quality in the field, some of them will rise. But I do also think there's a massive opportunity from a smaller name who's come over from America, or a regular DP World Tour player here, to go and make a name for themselves on a massive, massive stage. And I think in terms of when you're looking at the tips and the betting, that offers up some really tantalizing odds of some form DP World Tour players, who, guys that are just longer odds because of the strength of the field, yet are playing good golf, yet have a good links pedigree. And that's another thing, of course. This is links. Like, the best players in the world are the best players in the world, but they're the best players in the world playing not links golf 49 weeks of the year, essentially. We know how different links golf is and can be, especially when the weather's a factor, which it looks like it will be to an extent this week. So therefore, I think that gives you some really interesting looks at the odds when you're going, well, actually, who are the best links golf players in the world? And I know that it isn't a pure classic links golf course at the Renaissance, but it's it is linksy enough that it offers a different challenge. So I do think we will see one or two of those world-class players at the top there, but I guarantee there will be a player no one is expecting, or a longer odds player, banging contention come Sunday afternoon as well. At least one of them, I think.
Yeah, okay. Let's go through the top of the market there and some of these prices and names before we get the tips. And so six players under the 20-1 marks. We've got Scotty Scheffler, as always, leading it at 7-1, with Rory just behind him, 8-1. Patrick Cantlay and Xander, who sort of battled out really last year in some ways, at 14-1. Ricky Fowler as low as 16-1 now, because obviously a recent win, which helps in Scottish form, having won at Gullen a few years back, and then Victor Hovland, 18-1. So that's the top of the market. But let's find out if we are taking that on. And Ben, I'll start with you with your opening outright pick, please, this week.
Well, Kit was talking about hinting at how different the world rankings might look if they played just links golf. And it's one of the things that really fascinates me. I get sort of down rabbit holes sometimes and think, you know, if they only ever played sort of 6,500-yard tree-lined courses like Sedgefield, like, would Webb Simpson be the best player in the sport over the last 15 years? It's possible, isn't it? And the direction of travel in golf has been different because of technology and course design. And it therefore means that the best players in golf are those guys who... And the other side of the coin is, well, actually, Rory McIlroy is just so talented that whatever direction golf had gone and however he'd needed to learn to play it, he would have learned to play it. Anyway, that's a whole nother, probably quite dull podcast.
I'd listen to it, Ben. I'd be all over that. Love it.
You're not listening, pal. You're the main guest. I'm going to start with one of the best links golfers in the world anyway. It's Shane Lowry. You know, really doesn't take a lot of explaining. He is a first-timer at the Renaissance, so that's a minor concern, I would say. I don't think it will take a great deal of figuring out. Bookend 64s at the Travelers last time. I think he's five top 20s his last six starts. He's been top 20 all three majors this season. I think he's had a quietly very good season. Someone put it to me that he shouldn't be in the Ryder Cup team, and it seems madness to me. Like, he's just playing to a very high level. He's just not had that week where the putts drop. But there have been good signs with the putter lately, and I can see him coming alive over this next fortnight, no doubt about it. He said at the Travelers he was just waiting for everything to come together at the right time. And there was a sort of a twinkle in his eye. And we know what he meant by the right time. He meant a week on Sunday. But a good Scottish Open record, great Irish Open record when they've played on links and gone well in the Dunhill links. There'll be no surprise to me if the right time turned out to be this Sunday in the Scottish Open. I thought it was a great bet.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so that was 2 points each way, wasn't it? Shane Lowry, still available, 40-1, with six places there. And I think one thing I noticed looking at that, I think it definitely suits him if the scoring is a bit higher, actually, looking at some of the other wins in challenging conditions. I think that's more probably suited to him than the 2200s we saw in the early iterations. So lovely, that's the opening pick. Now let's come over to you, please, Tom Jacobs. Who are you going to retort with here?
Yeah, so it'd be Tommy Fleetwood for me at 22-1. And I don't necessarily back Tommy Fleetwood very often. And I'm always a little bit wary of him in the market. I think he's a little bit shorter based on his kind of win equity in PGA Tour events. But I think if he's ever, you know, going to win a PGA Tour event, why not be, you know, back on links golf in Scotland? You look at his last, you know, 10 starts in Scotland, he's made every single cut. His worst finish in that span was 25th. And he's been second twice, including here, and fourth twice, including at the Open Championship in St Andrews. So he absolutely loves playing links golf. He's up there, again, with Ben, what said there, with Shane Lowry. He's up there, one of the best players on links golf. He hasn't got the kind of the wins that you'd expect him to in that, but again, that maybe is very Tommy Fleetwood-centric. And it was kind of tough between him and Tyrrell Hatton this week. But I think, I just believe that Fleetwood's that little bit closer in terms of winning contention. Like, whereas, you know, we put up Tyrrell Hatton here for the Canadian Open a few weeks ago and he just missed that playoff. It was that playoff that Tommy Fleetwood was in. I think he should have won the tournament in regulation anyway. And then, you know, Taylor makes a monster putt to you know, make sure he doesn't prolong an extra playoff hole. And just that, the final round 63 in the US Open always seems to be, you know, a great sign. And yes, he did miss the cut of the Travelers, and yes, he did lose strokes and approach, which is slightly concerning. But I just love what he does here. I love the fact he's been back a little bit. He's been at Wimbledon watching the tennis. I don't think that necessarily helps your golf game, but it's nice to be back in the right areas. And I just love the fact he's done it differently here two times now. So he got into the playoff in 2020 with Aaron Rye, potentially should have won that. But then he came back last year and he opened with a round of 73, but then shot 69, 67, 67 to really climb the leaderboard. And he was probably one of the best players over the weekend without getting the win. So I just love where Tommy Fleetwood is with his game right now. I think it's a great sign, particularly for the Ryder Cup. I think it's great that he will win again soon somewhere. I don't know whether it's going to be on a, you know, a full DP World Tour event or one of these co-sanctioned events, but I'm hoping it comes in Scotland this week. And at 22-1, I think it's decent enough value.
Yeah, you look at his numbers and you wonder how he hasn't won. I know it's a playoff, not longer at the Canadian Open, but strokes gained categories, the six of them, he's seventh for total stroke gain, tee to green and around the green, and then top 35 for the others. So pretty incredible number. And for someone who wants to get some form ahead of the Open, he's got to be right up there, given it's basically his hometown right on the doorstep. So,
and I think he's another one, right, that we talk about motivations to win and whether they're just preparing for next week. I think he's someone that absolutely wants to win the Scottish Open. And I wouldn't, you know, sit there and say Scottie Scheffler doesn't, because I think he wants to win everything. And he's someone that is probably quite frustrated he hasn't won more this season, which is ridiculous. But like, he will be absolutely someone that wants to win. And a win is something that would boost his confidence ahead of next week. And the fact that, you know, finishing third or fourth probably wouldn't as such. So I think he'll be very comfortable next week anyway, but a win here would certainly boost his chances.
Yeah, Grant, sticking with that, Kit, we touched on the Ryder Cup early and people on the periphery. Who basically out of those guys on the edge are you expecting to go very well this week and stamp their authority on that Ryder Cup?
Do you know what? I'm going to lead this actually weirdly with an American who I think will have a good week this week and they need it. And that's Justin Thomas, who's got a decent record at Renaissance, has shown glimpses, but you know, what was it, the US Open, he said he was at his lowest ebb, or like the lowest he'd ever been on a golf course. And I like Justin Thomas on Lynx golf courses. And there's just something, a gut instinct really, maybe. So I think he'll do well. And I think he needs a big week because he's slipped outside. He's 13th in their standings right now. And, you know, I think at this stage right now, if it was picked, he'd get a pick, but he needs to show something. I mean, on the European...
His big problem is the playoffs, isn't it? Because he's 70th and only the top 70 get in the playoffs this year. So, I struggle to see any scenario where if he makes the playoffs, Zach Johnson doesn't pick him.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't make the playoffs, the problem he's got is he's got to go play somewhere else. Yeah. To impress. Yeah. Like, are we going to see the Masters?
Yeah.
I'd love to. And I had this thought 2 years ago with Zalatoris. Like, he ended up getting injured, but he would have had that option to potentially have to go somewhere else in the world to play golf to show that he's playing well ahead of the Ryder Cup. Now, Justin Thomas might be able to hop on the phone with Zach Johnson, and Zach said, no, you play wherever you like, pal. You're in the side. But he's 70th in the FedEx Cup, and I agree with Kit. I think if he hadn't played in Detroit last time, we'd be talking a 25-1 shot here.
Yeah, no, it's a great point.
That bad round of golf. Yeah. He was top 10 in the Travelers before that. So yeah, I'm with you, Kit. Yeah.
I mean, on the European side, I think the guy who's already been mentioned, who I'm sure will be mentioned again, is the top 10 machine, that is Alex Bjork. And people can look at it and go, well, he's only doing it in normal DP World Tour events, if you want. Doesn't have the experience in the big events. Well, mate, come and make a name for yourself this week. Get up there in this field. Have a good week at the Open. Then you're suddenly right there. And I think he will. I can't see Alex Bjork dropping off the way he's playing and the way he putts. I think he might, as well as Arberg, there might be a couple of late Swedish runs for this team, and a good couple of weeks here from Bjork could be what really gets people going, oh yeah, he's knocking off a nice bit of form in Europe, but oh, he's done it against a field with Scheffler and McIlroy and Schauffele and Thomas and Cantlay. Okay, that's a different conversation. So I'm optimistic about those guys.
Yeah, great. Justin Thomas, that's so true. I'm just having a look there. Still 45-1 and he's in three starts here. He missed the cut last time, but 8th and 9th. And yeah, I couldn't agree more with Alex Bjork and the others. And I think it'd be really interesting. Luke Donald will keep a close eye. If some of these guys on the edge end up Saturday and Sunday in final groups with against Americans, it could be really interesting and great viewing, because it could come down to pseudo match play, I guess, overall. But let's go on to the second pick and see who Ben has got for this event.
I'm going to move over to America now with Max Homer, although it'd be fair to say, I think if a Swedish player named Alex wins the tournament this week, one of us will be happy on this podcast. but yeah, Max Homer, I thought, was another that struck me as good value. Ultimately, I didn't really want to play too high up the market, because there is a bit of rain and wind around this week. I don't think it'll be awful. I think it'll be brutal by any means in terms of the scoring conditions, which we have had here at times, but it'll keep them honest. And, you know, attitude could go a long way. And Max Homer obviously would be known for his. And I think he's playing really, really well. If you take out the majors, which have presumably become some sort of mental hurdle for him because he's just not performed in any of them yet, really. If you take them out, he had a couple of top 10s either side of the PGA Championship. And then, okay, shot 72 day one of the Travelers, second round 65 to miss the cut by a shot. I can forgive him the 72 just days after a really disappointing weekend back home in LA. And then he went to the Rocket Mortgage Classic, where he probably doesn't really want to be there. You know, he's played a lot of golf. It's a shootout, which wouldn't usually favour him. And he's produced a top 10 tee to green display and had a quiet week with the putter. So essentially what I'm saying is I think Max Homer's game remains in good shape. He's not playing as well as he was in February, but I don't think he's far off. And then we come to this course. Obviously, he was in the top 20 last year, probably ran out of energy, having popped over to North Berwick on Friday night for that that round of golf. But it was a perfectly good first go at the course. He was the best driver in the field. Strangely, his approach play was awful, but that's usually his strength. And look, again, we come back to a world-class player at about the 40-1 mark with enough doubts around the weather and stuff. I thought that was the best way to go. So a point and a half each way, Max Homer. And hopefully, I mean, there's someone who really would see value in winning the Scottish Open, right? He played North Berwick because he fell in love with it watching a video. He's interested in this. He appreciates where he is. He's already given an interview with the Scotsman, I think, this week, Martin Dempster, saying how much he appreciates the support. And he's not alone there. But I think he is one of those players who'll turn up here wanting to win, and hopefully he can at a good price.
Yeah, 40-1, that's absolutely right. 1.5 points each way, and interestingly, identical odds to last year, which you would definitely take given he was, you know, came 16th in the end, I think it was, yeah, on his first outing. So some promising signs there. Tom, can you round off the outrights, please?
Yes, I basically warned everybody not to get too carried away with backing DP World Tour regulars at longer odds, just because they are longer odds, because there is such disparity, I think, in some cases with the top of the market and those. But Alexander Bjork, as we mentioned, at 100-1, I mean, this is a guy that's going off at 14-1, 16-1 every week. And to me, I couldn't necessarily avoid it. And I looked for more reasoning than that, because there has to be, right? You can't just go, well, he's 100-1 now and he's been 14-1 last week. He's been inside the top 10 seven times this season, including the last four straight events. I just think he's, you know, back to your points, that he's just playing too well with his approach and his putting to suggest that he just won't be in the mix. And the obvious concern is his lack of distance off the tee. Like, he quite often will hit a driver like 240 yards into the rough or something. I don't think that's necessarily going to impact him too much here. And his best finish on this course is 19th. He's 4-for-4 for made cuts. And he's actually got 263s here in four starts. And in the last 2 years, he's been inside the top 10 going into Sunday and just had a bad final round, which, of course, is, you know, the knock on Alexander Bjork long term. But look, if he comes down to the final stretch and it's him versus Scheffler or him versus, you know, Xander Schauffele or whoever, you are going to be slightly concerned. But I just think he's playing so well that sometimes I think you can stumble into these kind of results, and he will certainly be the type that will benefit from winning the Scottish Open massively. It changes his whole career, right? We've seen a player who I think is also in a Ryder Cup conversation, like Aaron Rye, has managed to get himself onto the PGA Tour. I think you could go and see, I don't know necessarily if Bjork can go and replicate that, but he will take inspiration from what he's done there and the player that he's become. So I think Alexander Bjork's really live here. I think the fact he's got 263s on this golf course, he's finished 19th, and he's been inside the top 10 going in Sunday twice, I think Bjork should be kept in consideration again this week.
Yeah, 100-1 still there. And the beauty of these events is also the extra places. So if it doesn't quite get done, it's 8 places for that point each way. And I can see Kit nodding. I'll come to you in a second, Kit, because I want to hear your thoughts on this special we've got from Tom. It's a top 20 pick, and you may know a little bit more about this guy. You can tell us about him. So, Tom, who have you got top 20?
Yeah, so I've gone with Daniel Hillier, and this could be a massive recency bias, right? Like, he's been fifth, missed cut third in his last four starts, but it's and a win, obviously, in that time at the Brentford British Masters. But I just looked at it and I just thought, has he got anything that kind of points to success here? And he's been 12th and 23rd at Fairmont St Andrews at the Hero Open. He's played well in the Irish Challenge twice. He's been 10th there. I think one of them was a links course and one of them wasn't. So I was encouraged by that. And the fact that he was actually 15th at the Vic Open over in Australia, which was won by Minwoo Lee and Ryan Fox was runner-up, I took those as really promising form lines for someone that's, you know, in the form of his life, like fifth, third and first amongst those last four starts. And look, he performed heroics to win the British Masters, and that's going to be very difficult to replicate. But I'm not asking him to do that. I'm asking him to ride his confidence onto a golf course that I think he can do well at. And, you know, I think it was tweeted out just after the International Open how well he's done in kind of 30 starts, whatever it was on the DP World Tour. And I think this is a player that's still a little bit green. We've still got things to learn about him. I think he's 24, maybe going on 25. And there's just so much ahead of him. You see that he's really close with Minwoo Lee, and I think we've seen his upward trajectory. And look, I don't think just because they're pals, you can couple them together and, you know, he's going to go and do what Minwoo Lee has done. But I think keeping that company and just taking the confidence from his recent win suggests that Hillier could go and have a good week here. And I think you do have to be, you know, slightly hesitant in terms of backing him each way. But I think top 20 is decent enough value.
Yep, no, it is really exciting to have a new Kiwi face there. And also great to welcome back Ryan Fox, who is in the field this week as well. And as you say, you keep tabs on people, and we've seen it on the PGA Tour. About to have a look at the Barbasol, but Wyndham Clark, people spoke about him for years. And then people, if you knew golf, you weren't too surprised when he did what he did a few weeks back. Thank you very much for that very thorough preview. We will look at the Barbasol shortly, but first, obviously, it's time for a game of Who Am I? Yes, we've got Ben Coley smirking. He still barely got over. If he doesn't get this one, I feel like we may not have Ben Coley back again. But let's just hope he gets it and it leads to a win. Who am I? How it works? I've picked a player in the field. This week it's the Genesis Scottish Open, who I like. I give some random facts and figures about them, and we basically try to work out who it is by popping our hand up and throwing guesses out there. So let's get into it, gentlemen. And the first one, and I've had to start, if anyone gets this first off, honestly, I'm resigning. It's going up with, I won Golfer of the Month in May 2021.
John Catlin. No, he's playing in the States.
It's moving on, but all good. I like a quick guess. I created a new low 72-hole score of 255. I'm not going to give you the year, but it was the lowest on the tour.
Lowest, that's DP World Tour, I'm presuming, not PGA Tour.
Yeah, and it was
Is it Jordan Smith?
It is not Jordan Smith, but nice guess with his 30 under. Okay, we'll go to the next one. I won the event, obviously, and I got a hole in one in the final round to really put the foot on the throat.
Oh, Garrick Higgo.
Kit Alexander. Garrick Higgo is the correct answer. Well done, you. The last two
Mallorca,
were.
I matched.
Yeah, exactly right. I matched Tiger Woods for the fewest starts to win three events on either tour since 1990, which was just 26. And I took Scotty Scheffler on the 1,500-yard par 8 challenge at this very course, Renaissance, which I'm sure you all watched that production. One of the greats a couple years back. So well done, Kit. Another win. But we got you to the third clue, which is a new record for Who Am I? So I'm glad to... and Ben had a good guess, so he'll be back.
how wonderfully condescending. Well done. Try again next time.
Yeah, it was a participation award. Well done, you. But just a reminder, if you love a game but not betting, then the Fantasy Game is perfect for you. Jump on the DP World Tour website. You pick six players for the week and you can compete against your friends and all the others, including Kit as well, I believe, for all the bragging rights. In the States this week, it's another co-sanctioned event with the DP World Tour, the Barbasol Championship at Keene Trace Golf Club in Kentucky. It was won by Trey Mullinax last year at 25 under. And that's back-to-back first-time winners at this event with Seamus Power, as mentioned earlier by Kit, who got it done the year before. It's a great opportunity for those who didn't make it into the Genesis Scottish Open field to compete and play for a very big purse overall. So, Ben, coming to you, this will be the second year we're seeing two co-sanctioned events between the PGA Tour and DP World Tour taking place the same week. And that this obviously is ranked a weaker field, but there's, you know, 50, over 50 DP World Tour players teeing it up in Kentucky. And it looks to be a really great opportunity for them to make a bit of a name for themselves. What do you make of the co-sanctioned arrangement and the benefits there are for both tours?
Yeah, look, it's great. I mean, I think part of the what you say there about the size of the prize is in some ways part of the problem. You've got a number of DP World Tour players here. Some of them are outside the top 119 or whatever the cutoff is this year on the races you buy. It's going to be a big sort of 3 or 4 months for them to try and keep their DP World Tour cards. And all of a sudden, if they play well for a couple of days this week, they could be on the verge of a PGA Tour card. So it's a really big deal. They're playing away from home. They're playing in pretty stifling conditions, very stark contrast to Denmark last week, I suppose, in Kentucky on a very American golf course as well. So the odds are against them. I think if you go back to last year, I was on Matty Schmidt, who went to university in Kentucky. 125-1. He was the 54-hole leader, and I think he shot 75 or 77 in the final round. And I think that just tells you how difficult it will be. Hurley Long stumbled as well on Sunday. Somewhat, he fared best of the Europeans. Marcus Helikilder played well. I mean, these are big hitters, by the way, which I think is a good starting point. But I think, hand on heart, we'll see a top 10 dominated by the home team. But hopefully one or two of those Europeans, maybe someone like Freddie Schott, who I've got a lot of time for, could go there and play well. But ultimately, when it comes down to Sunday, we had PGA Tour players dominating the top 10 last year, and I think we'll probably get something similar, even though this is a little bit weaker at the top end on their part.
Yeah, as you say, yeah, Hurley Long I had here, yeah, Schmidt, and also Ricardo Gouveia as well, obviously contended, went well. Kit, you know these guys pretty well, for a lot of them, Challenge Tour all the way through. How exciting is it? Do they get by this change and going over there? And what names do you think we should be looking at who could get into that top 10 and compete with the Americans, as Ben mentioned?
Well, it is huge for the reasons that Ben said. You could be struggling for your DP World Tour card. And if you're further down the rankings, that's why you're playing at Keen Trace rather than at the Renaissance. And in one good week, you've got your PGA Tour card wrapped up with a win here. And it is massive. And again, picking up on the American university influence thing, it's interesting. It's a very American course. You think it is going to suit the Americans more, and it does. But there are some guys who are better suited to that type of golf who happen to play DP World Tour and have started their pro careers there because they're European or because that's where the opportunity is. But actually had a lot of success in America in 3, 4, 5 years they spent at college and know that kind of golf inside out and will fancy it and will actually prefer it. And you know, a couple of those names you chucked out there are certainly there. I think there's a lot of Europeans who will be looking to kickstart their year because the names you mentioned there, kind of Helikilder especially, this result and a couple of good top 10s in America because he played 2 weeks. That he was looking like not retaining his tour card, having got promoted as number one from the Challenge Tour the year before. And it was going to America and having 2 good weeks there that enabled him to keep his tour card. So I would really be looking at guys who have experience and have success playing in America at college level, because for a lot of these guys, that'll be all we've got because their professional careers have been spent on the DP World Tour. So I'd be looking at who are the guys that went through the American college system. You know, Helikilder's in the field again. Someone like an Aaron Cockerell, who isn't like a big hitter, but he's Canadian, so he's got a bit more experience over there. I mean, a name that's jumping out to me for a little bit of recent form, and because he's an absolute beast of a human being who knocks it a massive distance, is Niklas Norgaard. The guy is a monster. He could play any sport he wants, but he's golf, fortunately. But someone like him who's shown a bit of form over here, but knocks it an absolute country mile, as Ben said, you know, typical American track, it's going to benefit a bit of distance. So yeah, if I was looking at which DP World Tour players, I'd certainly be looking for a little bit of distance off the tee. Actually, around the greens is quite valuable here as well. Historically, players who have come into the into the event with a bit of form in their short game have done pretty well. And yeah, that experience of having played in America and a little bit of success in college, I don't think goes amiss either.
Okay, great. Now that's very, very helpful. And Tom, we putting that in and also into your previews. This is another one that's a bit of a birdie fest, it's fair to say. It's been in the 20s since, I think, 2017, the winning score, which is a bit of a difference for these guys. Sometimes they're competing and, you know, winning scores 7-8 under, so they may well enjoy that. When you're doing your previews, I'm not going to ask if you enjoy the birdie fest events, but how much harder is it picking players when it's basically hole 'em and win in a way?
Yeah, it's one of those ones where, look, you try. It's funny because my first pick is going to fall into the wrong category, but like you try and look at people that you feel positive about in terms of putting. You don't necessarily have had the best 3 or 4 putting weeks coming in because it's definitely variable. But like you want someone that you think you believe can make the birdies. You want someone that's got a history of going 20 under par. Maybe if someone's won at 20, 22 under par in the past, that's always beneficial. Luckily, mine has, as we said there. So I think that having that kind of record, knowing how to, and just relishing the fact that you get to make birdies, right? Like, not everyone loves that. Like, it used to be Tyrrell Hatton used to prefer like the tougher conditions at kind of like Bay Hill, and that was it. But he's really adapted his game this season to shoot 18, 19, 20 under par, and it's really benefited him. I think that's mainly the important thing, is just having that historical, feeling in your mind that you can make enough birdies and really go for it. Do people enjoy it? Do I enjoy it? I do. I'm fine. I enjoy the birdie fests just as much as anything else. I just sometimes target goals quite interesting to see how close I can get to the hole, right? I'm absolutely fine with it. And I think the schedule has worked well when you've got the Travelers and the Rocket Mortgage, where there's been a lot of birdies to come into this event. And, you've got the other side of the pond with the Scottish Open. I think it's a good time to have an event like this.
Perfect. Let's have a look at the top of the market before we get into these picks and see if any of them will feature. We've got Taylor Pendrith leading it at 18-1. Lucas Glover, 22-1. Another Swede, Vincent Norman, 25-1. He's still holding on to his price there. And he did play in America at Florida State University. Akshay Bhatia at 28-1. And then Kevin Streelman, you can get 30-1 in some places, but he's also as low as 20-1. Elsewhere. So they're at the top of the market so far. Let's find out who our guys are picking. So Ben, lead us off please with your opening pick for outright.
I was quite tempted by Taylor Pendrith, which sounds remarkable really, but it's a really good course for him. He's playing really well and I don't think he's the worst favourite. He is, though, 197th out of 197 players in final round scoring. So if he's five shots clear entering the final round, don't count your money. I wasn't counting my money when I put him up at 100-1 in the Rocket Mortgage Classic, and he faded from, what was it, second to ninth or whatever. It's been a bad month. Anyway, Cameron Champ. I'm going with Cameron Champ. Look, you know what you're getting with Cameron Champ. There is nobody in this field who is more prolific in terms of their strike rate on the PGA Tour. He has three wins. They've all come in this tier of event, if you like, in the Sanderson Farms, the Safeway, as it was, now the Fortinet Championship and the 3M Open. I think this course could be really good for him. You look at who won it last year, Trey Mullinax. There are so many parallels between them as golfers, right down to the fact that if you've got a time when you need to hide behind a sofa, it's when they're chipping. And the way Trey Mullinax overcame that is he hit more greens than anybody else. So for Cameron Champ to win, he's going to have to hit loads of greens. But when he plays well, that's exactly what he does. Partly not because he's a great iron player, but because he's so much closer to the greens than most players in the field. He's driving the ball well. I thought he was the best driver in the field, I think, in rounds 2 and 4 last week in the John Deere Classic. I think this is a much better course for him. He started well in the Rocket Mortgage when I put him up at 150-1 there. He's putting a bit better. All he needs to contend, Cameron Champ, is to putt above average, lead the field in strokes gained off the tee, which is very much, you'd make him favourite in that market, and to be slightly above average with his irons. And that formula can win him tournaments. And I think there's loads of value in 40-1, but you just have to go into it with your eyes open. He could shoot 66 on day one, come out on Friday and miss the cut. That's just what you're buying into. But I don't mind in a field as poor as this.
Great. 40-1. That's seven places still available. And it's a 1.5 points each way there from you, Ben. Tom, you're outright pick number one, please, for the Barbasol.
Yeah, so I've got a little bit more conservative with Lucas Glover at the top of the market at 22-1. And I just believe he's the type of player that adapts really well to any type of golf. He's shown that over the last couple of weeks with fourth and sixth place finishes at the Rocket Mortgage and the John Deere Classic. And he was going into Sunday last week within three shots of the lead. So he's been inside the top 11 after five of his last six rounds, which is, I think, pretty consistent golf. And you look at the fact that he's been 10th, 6th and 12th in his last three made cuts in terms of strokes gained approach. He's going to set himself up with plenty of chances, I believe. And it's crucially going to be the putter, which is going to be the difference for Lucas Glover, as it has been for his whole career. But he's got his new putting technique. I don't know quite how new it is, but we've seen it on the coverage the last two times. He's been 4th and 6th. I think it's a bit more kind of broom handly. And he seems to be, relishing it. And that, to me, as soon as he's got some confidence with his putter, I think everything else takes care of itself for Lucas Glover. And you know, we talk about people that are, you know, established, and he's, you know, a major champion, you know, regardless of what people think about that. So he knows how to get the job done, and I'm really confident that Lukas Kovac can go well at 22-1.
Brilliant. Okay, Kit, this is when we always bring you in. Let's see, let's really test you here. Cam Champ or Lukas Glover, stories or facts or figures?
No real stories, but I mean, I like both, actually. I mean, Cam Champ, I have sort of liked for the Masters in recent years quite a lot when he's been in there. He's got a decent record at Augusta National. I know Ben quite rightly said those wins have come in not top tier events, but I do like Cameron Champ, and I do feel there's more from him. There's huge potential there still. He's still relatively young and he bombs it, we know. And yeah, Lukas Glover, Tom, 100% right in picking up on the new putter. He's always been an elite ball striker. He's really good from tee to green. Got huge experience. And actually, we've seen a little bit of experience kind of come to the fore in winners of this event before. Even if they were first-time winners, they've guys often that have been around the block a little bit on the PGA Tour in this event, even though it's not the strongest field. I'm thinking, like, you know, you've got Jim Herman, you know, Trey Mullinax have been around a little while before winning, Troy Merritt back in the day, you know. So I think a bit of experience, even though it's a weaker field and there are more guys who haven't won in it, it is definitely a bonus. And yeah, he's having a really, really good little resurgence this season, mostly down to that new putter that Tom mentioned, the long broom handle. I don't think they should be allowed, but, you know, while they are, he's using it well.
Yeah, all the time he is allowed, I'm going to bet on him to do well on it. And, you know, when he's not allowed anymore, I won't bet on him. But yeah, like I agree. I just think that the experience has really shown even this season. You know, you can't put him in the kind of same category as like Justin Rose or anyone like that, and Jason Day. But I think he's actually, when you think about like career paths, like he's not too dissimilar to like a Keegan Bradley. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we've seen him win recently, and I like
winning's hard. Yeah. Winning's hard, even for elite players. We've seen it. We know it. We see it every week on the DP World Tour. We saw it this week just gone. Even experienced players and players that have won find winning hard. So the more they can have done it and the more experience they've got under the belt when you get in that position, and let's be honest, the chances are if Lukas Glover's in that position, it will most likely be against someone who hasn't felt that feeling and done that going up the closing stretch on a Sunday. That has to count for something.
And it is worth saying as well that it's so rare for him to play in a field like this. Mm. And we've seen it over the years, like Jeff Ogilvy, when he was still a, you know, borderline top class player, when he was forced to dip down. I think he won the Barracuda Championship. Players like Aaron Baddeley, who had just got a touch of class. Gary Woodland, I think, won the Barracuda, didn't he? And you do see it often that players just, they take this big drop in grade, and it's like, it's levels, isn't it? And he is, without question, a class act. So yeah, if that broom handle keeps working, he's a massive player.
Yeah, he's a class act. And Kit, just quickly there, you mentioned Troy Merritt, who is literally trending everywhere because we just want eyes on him. We don't know where he's playing. It's clear there. It looks like it's likely to be Scotland, which is definitely affecting the odds in America. And this is all done very live. And I know Ben was pretty keen on Vincent Norman. We haven't pulled the trigger right here. But what can you tell us about him? Is he a bit of horses for courses? Because looking at him, he's got a few top 10s, but they're always when they're birdie fest, 19 unders and 18 unders I saw throughout the season. What can you tell us about another Swede, just to round off all the Swedes possibly playing this week? You are the head of Swedes.
I'll take that. Yeah, I'm Vincent Norman. I mean, he's a player, again, that has taken an interesting career path for me, in as much as he came out and made some ground on the DP World Tour quite early, got some invites off the back of a stellar college career, and you thought, oh, he's going to kick on. But he is now starting to show a little bit more consistency in the States and get back to what was getting him some top 10s in the DP World Tour very early in his pro career. An event like this is really good for him. Like, he looks a little bit short for me at that top, but I'm not the expert tipper. But I do think it's coming with him. Maybe he needs to get himself in contention a little bit more. And it's almost similar to what we were talking about with Ricky Fowler actually a few weeks ago, where he was just starting on that brilliant run of form. And it was, does he need to taste contention and get those feelings back a couple of times and have the disappointment before winning? He has now, and that often is the case. You don't often win on your first time getting into that position, especially when it's been a tough road to get there. So I think with more experience, as we say with Hillier, you know, he's still a young guy, but Norman is very much one to watch for, and someone that is a caliber of golfer and potential but not this year, but will potentially be in the Ryder Cup conversation going forward. He's that level, potentially. He could be amongst the best in Europe.
Oh, great. Well, I'm looking forward to him and Arberg already pairing up for years to come. It should be...
Oh, him and Arberg, the Højgaard twins.
And we could just have a Scandinavian team.
It's just a Scandinavian show. We'll look for new sponsors there. Tom Jacobs, I'm going to come to you now for your second pick, please, at the Barbasol and final outright pick.
Yeah, so it was Troy Merritt in this spot. And obviously, he's got on his travels, which, you know, whether his yips carry over to Scotland, we'll soon find out. But for me, it's Grayson Murray at 50-1. And look, Grayson Murray is an interesting character, not one that, you know, people will warm to. But from just a purely betting prospect, he's a former winner of this event, a completely different golf course. But I like the fact that when he drops into this level of field, he finished, I think, top 15 at Puerto Rico earlier this season. And he's really rebuilding his career again on the Korn Ferry Tour. I think he's actually settling down a little bit, and maybe just dedicating himself to the game a bit more, which ultimately, when he first came out, he was, you know, a strong PGA Tour player. And he finished sixth last week at the John Deere Classic. He opened with a 64 and closed with a 65. And he's got that recent win on the Korn Ferry Tour not so long ago, I think about five or six starts ago. So a win on the Korn Ferry Tour recently, a sixth at the John Deere Classic last week when he was in contention with two really low rounds either side, bookends. I think Grayson Murray is an attractive price at 50-1 in a field where we're not sure about the rest of them.
Yep. Okay, beautiful. Yeah, 51, that was a point each way, wasn't it? And fair to say, I don't follow Grayson Murray's life too much, but I did have him a few, just 3 weeks back, was at the UNC Championship where he had a four-shot lead with five holes to go and somehow didn't win it. So, yeah, firmly my bad books. But there you go, your second outright pick. No emotion in betting, and 51 there. Ben, round it off for us with the outrights. Who have you got coming in here, please?
Trevor Cohn. Now, you might not have heard of Trevor Cohn, but if you want to see someone both effortlessly powerful and effortlessly beautiful, then check his Instagram page. The boy is a looker. But he's a really promising player as well. He's actually the leader in this Barbasol field in greens hit this year. Now, we don't often refer to greens hit these days because it's been surpassed by strokes gained stats, and rightly so. So in some ways, it's disingenuous for me to bring it out now that it suits with a golfer I'm advocating. But I do think that formula is quite a good one here, like bomb it and hit greens. And then if you get a hot week with the putter, then we're in business. And he certainly bombs it. And although his results don't look up to much, he's playing a little bit better. He's driving the ball superbly. And he has he's one of those whose his putting stats are poor, but he's had a couple of weeks, probably two of his last six or eight appearances, where he's putted to a very good level. So I think he has the game for this. And in terms of just where we are in the States as well, I think he went to college next door to the East, and he won on the Korn Ferry Tour next door to the West. And I tend to think people underestimate that a little bit. Like in American terms, yeah, that'll be 3 hours either way. So for us in England, it might feel like, oh, well, that's just the other end of the planet. In America, it's around the corner. But most of all, you're talking similar conditions. He'll be used to playing in what can be really stifling heat there in the Midwest at this time of year. He'll have played on very similar golf courses as well. He'll be used to the fact that this golf course tends to be quite soft. They had a lot of rain in May. So conditions could really suit him. As I say, he's won a couple of times on the Korn Ferry Tour, and while yet to establish himself at this level, we're getting a three-figure price about one of the longest drivers who hits more greens than anybody in this field on this year's form. And that seems like a good formula to me. It's quite a basic one, but I was happy in an event won by a big hitter who led the field in greens hit last year to try and find the successor to Trey Mullinax's throne there.
And there you go. And it's nickname Head, Conehead, to his fans.
I was going to go Traffic, but
probably better than saying what I, absolutely right. But, I didn't look at the, just try to find anything about him. I was expecting, you know, a whippersnapper from uni. He's 30 years old. So he's obviously timing his run a little bit later, but good to hear we've got another hottie to keep an eye on the tour. Tom, are you going to tell us something about Conehead?
No, I haven't got the information on Conehead. That is slim pickings. He is definitely progressing on tour, though, so I do like the pick. But I was just going to say, I was going to add one player. You know, I think it's worth talking about a DP World Tour regular, and we talked about kind of who would suit the American conditions. And I think Alejandro Del Rey fits that bill. He's someone that went to Arizona University, you know, obviously where John Rahm came from. I don't think he's going to be John Rahm at any point during his career. But he was inside the top five at the KLM Open. He shot 66 in the second round or third round last week in Denmark. He's been generally there or thereabouts. He opened with a 68 at the US Open to be inside the top 15 after round one. And we talk about effortless power, he's got it. So we're talking about just kind of skill sets and someone that could come over and surprise. And like Kit said, maybe elevate their game because they've returned to America rather than trying to focus on the DP World Tour. I think Alejandro Del Rey at 100-1 fits that bill. So I haven't necessarily got to him yet, but he would be someone that I'd keep an eye on.
Yeah, I saw that he had a dedicated post. I can't remember who he played with the US Open. It was just the number one and two, I think, for longest drives. And they were basically next to each other. Good
I
stuff.
I think he played with like Nienaber and, sorry, Ali. Nienaber and Luke Liss, was it? Yeah. Then he drove once, didn't he, on the sixth hole?
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely ridiculous length. Love it. Okay, so one to keep an eye on, but won't be in the tips recap. But I tell you who will be. It's Ben's top 20 special. We've had Tom's in the Genesis Scottish Open. Ben, who are you throwing at us?
Well, I'm going to preface this by saying statistically one of the worst golfers on the PGA Tour, Max McGreevy. Now, the thing with Max McGreevy is that he has played badly for the thick end of 18 months. But four times he's popped up in weak fields and stuck around all week. Well, maybe that's a bit generous with regards to his performance here last year. He was 13th, I think, here last year, having led at halfway. So he was never in doubt that he was going to land the top 20. He went on to finish, I think, fifth in the Wyndham Championship to keep his card. That showed some real mettle. He needed that performance. We always have that storyline in the final event of the regular season. And he was the one who got there. Yeah, he had a bit of a boost in terms of climbing up the rankings as players dropped out of the FedEx Cup, but he went and delivered in the final event. He's got another in Bermuda, again, a weak field when the best players in the world are either taking a week off or playing elsewhere. And I think he was runner-up earlier in the season in Puerto Rico as well. So that's four times last year that he produced that top 20, which we're looking for here. He actually a good deal better on some occasions. And I think at 500-1 or close to it, you should consider backing him outright as well. In terms of the here and now, you'll just see missed cuts by his name. But I dug a little deeper. He's been missing cuts more recently by narrow margins, which I always think is something to look out for. His long game seems to be improving. Certainly his driving's been good. He's a very capable putter. And if you go to round two last Friday, the John Deere Classic, he was 5-under through 14 holes on course to make the cut. And I think the fact that he hadn't had a paycheck for 3 or 4 months probably played a part in how he finished. He clumsily dropped a shot of 15. And then at the 17th, he had to chip over the bunker, the par five at the John Deere. And if he got up and down, he basically sealed a weekend tee time and he fatted it into the bunker. And I think a player that's been missing cuts like that, I can sort of understand how and why that happened. And I'm hoping he can appreciate that there were loads of good signs in that round. He played brilliantly for 14 holes. And now he takes a massive drop in grade. And if you look at his quotes from this course last year, A, he said he loved the course. He said he actually felt it suited him because he doesn't spin the ball a lot. And it was so soft that some players struggled to control that. But B, he also said, look, in this sort of company, I know I'm good enough. And although his total strokes gained number for the year suggests otherwise, I think he's worth a small interest. You know, we will have a couple of players who find form here for the dropping grade. And Max McGreevy might just be one of them. So I think he's about 14-1 for the top 20. As I said, he's certainly done that at a better strike rate than 1-14 over the past 15, 18 months. And hopefully he can do it again.
Yeah, as you say, exactly right. 14-1, 1 point. And, you know, he actually does rank in the top 50 for round four scoring. So when he gets there, because he hasn't the last eight
he's
of
played one.
we might have something going there. And I love it on Twitter when, you know, someone wins, you go, oh, of course he was trending. And it just shows miscut. And I feel like we're due one of those when, yeah, just a rogue one. So there you go. That's both events covered off there. Plenty of names and numbers in there. So before we say goodbye to the guys, just time to recap all of those tips. Starting with Ben Coley's picks this week. And at the Genesis Scottish Open, he has gone for Shane Lowry at 40-1, 2 points each way, and Max Homer also at 40-1, 1.5 points each way. And then over in the Barbasol Championship, it's Cameron Champ at 40-1, 1.5 points each way, and Trevor Cohn, 150-1, 1 point each way. Special, a top 20 finish for Max McGreevy at 14-1, good for a point. Tom Jacobs has gone for Tommy Fleetwood in the Genesis Scottish Open at 20-1, 2 points each way, and Alexander Bjork, 100-1, 1 point each way. His special bet was also a top 20 finish for Daniel Hillier at 6-1, good for a point. And in the Barbasol Championship, it was 2 points each way on Lucas Glover at 30-1 and 1 point each way on Grayson Murray at 50-1. Thanks again to our panel of experts for those fantastic insights into this week's events. You can find Ben Coley on Twitter at Ben Coley Golf. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ollie. Good couple of weeks coming up. So hopefully we get a winner either this week or next. We'll take either.
Absolutely, we will. And Tom Jacobs, he's on Twitter at TomJacobs93. Thank you very much, Tom, for joining.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I will get that handle changed to golf at some point when I can steal it off somebody. And yeah, look, it's a big couple of weeks now for the Ryder Cup especially. So really looking forward to the Scottish Open and the Open Championship back to back.
Great. And of course, Kit, who is at Kit on the course. Kit, they both mentioned the Ryder Cup and big events. You can't. We're going to ask you, are you going to be on Threads anytime soon with the same handle?
I'm not going to be on Threads, I'll be honest. I'm trying to, too much social media can be a bad thing. I'm Instagram and I'm on Twitter. That's enough. If you want to follow me, I'll be on there. So don't look for me on Threads.
Make sure you follow Trevor Cohn as well.
Get Trevor Cohn on Instagram as well. I'm following him straight away now. But yeah, we got a great couple of weeks coming up. Great fun as ever today, guys. So fingers crossed for your picks this week.
Absolutely. And join us again next week where we will be previewing the big one. It's the 151st Open Championship from Royal Liverpool. Until then, enjoy the golf. Good luck with your picks and see you next time on The Tips.